This is Mac Voices number 506. I'm Chuck Joyner, and I want to welcome you to the show that's the talk of the Macintosh community. This time, we welcome three different guests talking about three different topics that I think you'll find interesting. First, we get to welcome back Warren Williams of the iWork Users Group with another of his tips on how to get more out of Apple's iWork suite of products. Warren will tell us how the Styles function in Pages can help you create a consistent look and feel for your published projects. Then, we welcome a new correspondent to Mac Voices. Dan Porhadiv joins our team to provide commentary on the world of Apple and Macintosh from a teenage perspective. Dan is an accomplished writer who has some interesting thoughts on the current state of the iPod and Apple's recent releases, but I'll let him tell you all about that. Finally, we connect with Phil Shapiro, the creator of the new Not a Video iPod email list. The what list, you ask? Phil's sense of humor showed up in the creation of this new resource for those who are interested in authoring content for Apple's music player turned portable video device. He'll tell us why it won't just be entertainment on your iPod in the near future. After that, we'll update you with some news and information. But right now, let's go straight to our guests. As we promised on an earlier edition of Mac Voices, Warren Williams of the iWork User Group is going to be joining us on a regular basis to talk about Apple's new Pages and the iWork suite of programs. And Warren's back this time around to give us the next tip in our evolution into iWork. Warren, welcome back.
Hi, Chuck. It's good to be back with you.
Warren, as you know, I received the iWork and AppleWorks User Group newsletter. And I've noticed that you've been doing some articles on using styles in Pages. And I think I'm going to ask you this time to explain styles, what they are, and what they can do for those of us that are trying to produce documents with Pages.
Sure, I'll be glad to. Styles are a great feature. They allow you to memorize all your font settings and formatting settings in this unit called a style. And you can then reapply that style to any other set of text you want in that document or in any other document with a single mouse click. To give you an example, let's say that your user group newsletter has a headline and you like it in 18-point, let's pick a font, I never know how to pronounce it, La Cita Grande, and you like a shadow and you want the shadow set at a certain angle and a certain opacity. And you want certain color text, all you do is you set it up once. And once you have it the way you like it, you then tell iWork to memorize the style. And I'm saying iWork because this works in Keynote or Pages. It works in both apps. And it memorizes the style. You give it a name. And from that point on, whenever you want to use that style with different text, for example, you might want to use that in a headline of an article, or you might want to use it in an index or your user group's directory. You can just use that style with a single mouse click. You write your text and mouse click the style on the style palette, and Pages or Keynote will format the text that you selected into that style. So it's a very easy way to get consistency in your documents. For a business, of course, that's very important. They want they usually have standards for their publications, and they want the same look and feel. But for nonprofits, I think it's even more important because, as user groups, we don't have the time to set up these standards for our publications. We rely on volunteers. And what you can do is if your volunteers all agree to use Pages, you can have them use the same styles, and you get more consistency in your publications, even if you change layout people or editors, as we're so often doing. So what I would suggest for the iWork beginners is to go ahead and explore styles. They have a lot of power. I keep going to AppleWorks after all these years. iWork supports three types of styles: paragraph styles that'll format an entire paragraph, list styles to control any of your lists, and character styles that'll allow you to change the characteristic. I'm standing here with my hands waving to show you what you can do. The character styles will do things like change. Let's say you want the name of your publication to always be in, I'll pick another font, the Times Italic Bold. You can save that as a style, and whenever you highlight anything and click on that style, it'll go to Times Italic Bold. So that's, you know, important for beginners to try to explore styles. If you'll bear with me, a tip for advanced users, iWork has the ability to not only memorize styles, but transfer them between documents. And you can do this two ways. There's a cut and paste style, there are cut and paste style commands on the format menu. So once you get a style you like, you can cut it and paste it into another document. And I like to combine that with a different tip, and that is, why don't you consider creating a blank document that would be your repository or your library of styles. And whenever you create a style you think you might want to reuse, just copy it, go over to your repository or library document, open the document, and paste the style in. And you can collect all your styles that way in a single document, which is very handy because you'll know where they all are. And then you can take that one step further. iWork has an import styles feature, which allows you to import multiple styles from any document, but they have to be from a single document. So if you created this library or repository, you can use this, you create a new document, and then you open up the library, and you use import styles, and you just import the styles you want to use in your particular document into the new document, and you have all your styles there ready to go in your blank document. So it's a very powerful feature for beginners, for advanced users, and I think it's an underutilized feature because you have to discover it. It doesn't hit you in the head. The style draw is not open by default. But once you get the feel of it, it's really easy. If you don't mind a plug, Chuck, if people want more details about it, we're about to publish our third articles on styles. As you mentioned, we're doing these articles. They are step-by-step tutorials that start at the very beginning and walk right through this more advanced idea of keeping a library of styles. And they've been in the October, November, and will appear in the December issue of the iWork Journal, which is part of the iWork User Group membership. So, a few minutes about styles.
Warren, it's very interesting. Now, I want to make sure that I understand it correctly. Styles are not something that you necessarily are going to control every element of a page with just one style, but you're going to be able to control the various elements, say a title or a particular paragraph or maybe a pull quote or something, that once you select that and apply a style, it goes to that, but you're not controlling the overall look of the page with just one style or group of styles.
Actually, I control the bulk of my text with a single style. That way I don't have to select my format for my text. I don't have to worry about the size I want, the font I want. I just have a basic style for my basic text. And whenever I want to format something in that style, I just go ahead and use it. So I'll use it for large segments of a document and also different styles for the headlines and subheads and lists within that basic document.
So I can select a big chunk of text that has heads and subheads and apply a style to it, and it knows everything to do?
That's correct. Yep, knows everything to do with that block of text. Now, it will not give you indented paragraphs in that block of text unless you go and use your indented paragraph style. But when I'm writing a letter, of course I use a template, but if I want to do three paragraphs of a long quotation which has a wider left margin, I have a style for my indented paragraphs, and I usually select the style first because that's the way I like to work, and then just type away, and it's in the right style. But you can do it the other way around. You can prepare your entire document and then click through it and just go this style here, this style here, this style here, and format your entire document with a bunch of mouse clicks.
Well, after that kind of explanation, you can see how if you are creating something that has some repetition to it, and I mean by that that, you know, you need multiple copies or to maintain the look and feel of correspondence from an office or a newsletter or anything like that, that that could save you an amazing amount of time.
Yeah.
Warren, how much different are styles in Pages than in AppleWorks for those folks who are familiar with AppleWorks? Or did AppleWorks even have styles?
AppleWorks has styles, and again, it was a very underutilized feature. It wasn't as smooth in AppleWorks. Earlier versions of AppleWorks had reliability problems with styles, and they do nice things in iWork with styles. For example, in the style drawer, when it presents you the name of your style, it actually does it in the style. So if you have said that your titles will have shadows, the title style will look in your style drawer the way it does on in your document. So it'll have a shadow, and you can go over and pick it out from your list. And you create styles differently. In AppleWorks, you have to basically go through the commands, and it captures the style you want. With iWork, you format the paragraph the way you want it, or the text the way you want it, and once you have it the way you want it, then you just say to iWork, hey, this will be a style, I want to call this style such and such, and it memorizes the current settings. So it's much easier to create styles.
It sounds like styles are something that everyone should have in their tool belt when they're working with Pages.
Yeah, anybody who's going to do more than one document of a similar type, it can save you a lot of time.
By now, I'm hoping our listeners are very familiar with the iWork users group, but if not, Warren, how do they go about finding more about this, and how do they go about getting a copy of the iWork journal so that they can pick up on all three of these articles?
What they might want to do, if they want to start with a specific issue, is why don't they call our phone number. You can do it on the web, but to my electronic colleagues, I hate to say use the telephone, but call us. It's a toll-free number, 888-781-AWUG. I don't know what the numbers are. That'll get you to a person, or a person will return your call. And you can tell them what you want, and we're a user group. We'll work with you and try to figure out what you're looking for and make you happy.
Well, Warren, we appreciate you coming back and sharing this tip, and we look forward to all the others, again, to help ease the transition for so many of us over into Pages so we can appreciate the power of the program, and not just Pages, but, of course, Keynote and whatever else is coming down the line.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity, Chuck. I always enjoy talking with you and with my user group colleagues.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
We've been talking to Warren Williams of the iWork Users Group, and Warren will be rejoining us on a regular basis to talk about Pages, Keynote, and anything else that falls under the iWork heading. Warren, thanks again.
Good talking with you, Jeff.
This year at Macworld Boston, I had the chance to meet and get to know Dan Porhoti of MacTeens. And it was interesting. We had some great discussions about the announcements that have been made by Apple over the past few months and the way that the Macintosh community and Apple community are going. And it's pretty clear that as a younger person than a lot of us, that Dan has a little different perspective. And I'm very excited to let you know that Dan is going to be visiting us on Mac Voices on a regular basis to talk about what's going on in the Apple community and the Mac community and both the Apple and Mac industries from a youthful perspective. So, Dan, I'd like to welcome you to Mac Voices as our new correspondent.
Well, thank you. I know you have one of those listener problems. I'm like the listener exterminator. I start talking and people start leaving. So,
I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think you give yourself enough credit. If some of the listeners have not had the chance to see some of your writings, where is the best place for them to go and start to get familiar with you?
I write for MacTeens.com. That's a MacTeen site, obviously. Just a lot of teen content. I write a weekly column called Parody Perspective, where I just jab or pretty much write whatever I want. Sometimes it's satire. Sometimes it's just commentary on some Apple news. I also contribute every once in a while to Mac Addicts magazine. My next article, I think, is going to be in January. and my website, proudy.com, T-O-U-R-H-A-D-I.com, which is my blog. Post a lot there, too.
So you don't have anything to do but go around contributing to places.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much.
Dan, obviously the hot topic right now is the iPod with video. There are a number of us, and I've heard these discussions, who may be just a little older and who are saying, you know, we don't quite get it. Is it really going to be a great idea to watch video on a screen this size? What's the perspective from the youth angle?
So far, I've had mine for 3 or 4 days now. One column I wrote for MacTeens, I described bringing my iPod Nano to school, where I took it out just to look at it, and all of a sudden the classroom broke out. You know, it disrupted the class entirely because everyone's like, oh, my God, is that a Nano? I'm like, yeah. So I wound up passing it around. Everyone was so excited to see it. When I took out my iPod video, it was, iPod with video or whatever you want to call it, the response was pretty much the same, except people were a little more excited because I was showing them, look, here's Anchorman on my iPod. They were freaking out. I think what it is when people figure out what they can do with it, they're going to get a little more excited about it. I've been I have study hall in class where I sit down for an hour and do pretty much nothing. You know, you're supposed to study, but I don't. No one does that. It's, you know, should they call it sleep hour or something? I take out my iPod and I watch Family Guy or Anchorman on my iPod while everyone else is doing homework. It's something that, you know, I think many people will love to do once they figure out how to do it. Because when it comes to taking like a DVD and putting it on your iPod, Apple doesn't provide any documentation for that. You have to learn how to do it yourself with programs on the Mac or programs on Windows. And the whole, you know, music video on your iPod thing is nice. It's just not that appealing yet. But once you see, look, I can put Family Guy, one of the most popular TV shows for kids nowadays, or Anchorman, one of the most popular movies, on your iPod and watch it whenever you want, that's going to be a huge selling point. It's just a matter of getting that information out there.
So the idea of watching video on an iPod-sized screen is one that does appeal?
No, I think the small size of the screen doesn't really matter right now, or in any form, because I've been watching shows all the time, every day, sometimes up to an hour a day just to test it out, and it hasn't been distracting or hasn't hurt my eyes. It's fun. It's even submersive at times.
Now, how about the content? You're talking about some TV shows and some movies right now. How do you feel from your perspective about Lost and Desperate Housewives being sort of the flagship TV shows that are in the iTunes Music Store, and also the idea of buying videos from the iTunes Music Store to watch primarily on your iPod?
I haven't ever watched a single episode of Lost or Desperate Housewives, not one. And, I'm thinking of buying one just to see. I know Lost is one of those shows that if you don't watch it from start to finish, you'll get confused. So I've been a little skeptical of that, and Desperate Housewives just doesn't seem interesting to me. So I haven't bought any TV shows, and I just bought one music video. Right now, the video content that iTunes is offering isn't really appealing to me personally, but the whole content thing, I think, is really in. They really need to expand their offerings. If they can take TV shows and get networks like Fox, who has Simpsons, who has American Dad, who has Family Guy, who has Malcolm in the Middle, and take those shows and say, okay, here's $2 an episode, I know I'd be buying them every week.
That's interesting. You'd buy them rather than maybe record them on your Mac and download them?
Well, yeah, the whole recording, if you want to take it directly from a TV, you'd have to use like Elgato's ITV or something, and that can get pretty expensive. You know, if you spend $250 on a box to convert from what's on your TV to go on your Mac, and if you want to wait for the DVD, you can wind up waiting years for that episode that you just watched on TV last week to come out on DVD so you can burn it to your, or rip it to your Mac. But if you can just download the episode for, you know, $2 the day after you watch it, that's definitely appealing.
Okay, so other than the shows you've just mentioned, what would you say would be compelling content for younger people to go out and that would drive them to buy the iPod video or would drive them to the iTunes Music Store to start filling it up with content, other than music, of course?
The video aspect, music videos, again, are nice, but a lot of websites, there's launch.com, MySpace does it, most of the artists' websites do it. They offer music videos for free. And it's not like, you know, you watch it once, you can never watch it again. You can just keep going to this website and watch it over and over again. People don't really want to, you know, pay $2 for a music video that they can watch for free. And I guarantee you every music video on the iTunes Music Store you can watch for free somewhere. And the quality is nice, but 320 by 240, it's designed for the iPod. So you're not going to want to watch that music video full screen on your TV or on your computer. So I don't think the music video aspect yet is that appealing. The TV shows, like I said, if they get more shows, if they get Fox shows, if they get, the anime shows and the Adult Swim shows from Cartoon Network, then they're going to start getting a lot of people that I know to start looking at the content on iTunes.
So for right now, the content appeal is limited, but the cool factor isn't, and the fact that you have an iPod-sized screen is not a consideration.
Right. I think when people are going to go buy an iPod now, they're still going to buy it for the music. The video, as Apple is promoting it, is just going to be, you know, an added benefit. If someone knows how to do it, if someone is aware of the whole video aspect, that they can get TV shows and music videos off iTunes, and if they can rip their own DVDs onto their iPods, then that'll be a seller. But I think at this point it's still the music, and the video is second right now for most people.
Dan, the iPod's been out for a while now. From the youth perspective, is the coolness wearing off yet?
It was. I actually wrote a column about that too, how someone told me flat out that, you know, they were asking about what MP3 player they should buy, and I said, you know, you should get an iPod, and they flat out told me, no, iPods are not cool anymore. And, you know, it was a pretty shocker to me because I love iPods, and I think I have 5 of them now, and, you know, I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? So I did some research, and I looked up on the website and what people are saying, and there was a point when Apple, there was like this gap between when Apple introduced new iPod stuff or fancy iPods. It was basically just increments, and it was getting to the point where people were saying, you know, iPods aren't cool anymore. I can get another MP3 player that does 10 times more. But I think now, for some reason, the iPod curve is coming back, and people are starting to see them as cool again. I don't know how that works, or maybe it was just a fluke when people started telling me that no, iPods weren't cool. But right now, they seem to be more popular than ever before.
It always gets a little scary when you start seeing market share numbers in the Wall Street Journal for iPods, and you hear that the stock price is being driven by the number of iPods that were sold versus what was expected to be sold. Those aren't usually the kind of things that have a cool factor. And, you know, that concerned me a little bit, because even though Apple's done a great job of updating and adding new models, it does seem to start to become part of the culture. And this hopefully opens up a whole new angle to it. You think that's a fair perspective from what you're hearing or what you're seeing?
Well, yeah. I mean, the analysts, you know, the share dropped after Apple announced its quarterly earnings, that it sold less iPods than Wall Street estimates, because Wall Street's estimates were, you know, they want every person in America to own 3. It's basically, you know, unrealistic. And Apple has been meeting its own predictions, and it's been surpassing its own predictions. Like you said, the iPod is pretty much becoming a cultural icon now. It's no longer just a fad product or something people want to have as a toy. It's, you know, it's something you want to get. If you're looking to listen to music on the go, just like the Walkman, you know, however many years ago, the iPod's pretty much at that point right now.
Well, Dan, I'm excited about having you as part of the Mac Voices team to be on a regular basis to have conversations like this about what you're seeing from a different perspective than many of us do, especially many of the listeners here. We want to get more younger people involved in listening to the show and participating. So if you have ideas or things you want to talk about, please let us know, and I will definitely be calling you on a regular basis to have you on and see what's on your mind.
I'm sure after, you know, a few of these, I'll get more used to talking over the phone to do interviews.
I don't think that's a problem. Just keep on doing what you're doing at MacTeens and your own website and all, and I'm sure the listeners are going to find what you have to hear very interesting.
Great. Thank you.
Dan Borjati of MacTeens, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep, thanks.
The introduction of the iPod with video has spawned a number of new products, services, and even a small community of people that are really into the idea of creating content for the iPod with video. Joining us now to talk a little bit about a resource that he has created, and one that doesn't quite seem to make a lot of sense, at least not right off the bat, is Phil Shapiro, an activist with the Washington Apple Pie, and a frequent contributor to the Mug Center's newsletter content email list. Phil, welcome to Mac Voices.
Thank you, Chuck.
Phil, we're here to talk about your new email list that is called Not a Video iPod, which seems to be somewhat counterintuitive.
Yeah, the email list is set up tongue-in-cheek for video producers and multimedia producers who want to create content for the new iPod that's not a video iPod. And the email list is on Yahoo Groups. The email list is called Not a Video iPod because Apple is not representing it as a video iPod. It's an iPod that plays video. And the people on this email list honor and respect that designation from Apple, that it has this extra capability. But we're gathered together. There's a bunch of very talented people, and they're sharing tips and techniques, and they're sharing information about the content that they've made so that there's an immediate audience for whatever is made. People can look at it and give positive feedback or constructive feedback. And even some, there's one fellow on the list who's creating screencasts, which are narrated explanations of computer activity. He's creating screencasts, and he told me today he's creating screencasts that work well on the new iPod. So people could be learning computer stuff on that new iPod. It's just incredible. I didn't think it was even possible until I sent out a question this morning, and an hour later somebody said, yes, I'm doing that.
Well, you've got quite a bit of traffic on this for such a new list and a very, very new device. And it also looks like you are attracting some interesting talent. I subscribed and I get the digest version, and I see that, for example, you're on there contributing frequently. Phil Podgetts is on there contributing frequently. Some people that are known in the video arena are already on this and throwing out some very interesting information.
Yeah, what I like is that everything is archived so that any member of the public at any time can come and look through that archive. They do have to join the email list, I believe, to look at the archive. Although, you could subscribe to this email list via RSS and read it in a news reader, which means you don't have to necessarily subscribe to stay in the loop. And I'm expecting that there might be some journalists, some reporters, either print or television or radio reporters who just might want to stay a little bit on top of this. They don't have to subscribe. They could just get the RSS feed, and if there's anything in particular that they were wanting to follow up on, they could subscribe just for the day and then contact a person or ask a question of the list.
And that's one of the great things that Yahoo has done. They've enhanced the value of their list service, which is free, and as Phil said, anyone can subscribe. But now you can enjoy it through your favorite RSS reader. You don't necessarily have to be a member of the list and have it coming into your email box. But Phil, don't you agree that it's better to join the list, especially if you have a sincere interest in this and are not just a voyeur?
Yeah. You know, by joining the list, you're giving a vote of support for the community of people who are sharing information. You're giving a vote of support for the device itself, for Apple, and for the future of portable learning, for people who care about the portability of learning. You know, Apple is selling videos currently that don't have too much connection to the learning process, more the entertainment, and that's totally fine. But those of us who care about learning are just fascinated about having 100 or 200 hours of learning that is very portable, that can be downloaded from the Internet, and that some people might be crazy enough to create for free, either by themselves or in groups with others. Yeah, it is good to sign on to the list. You could just sign on to the list and choose to read messages on the web, which means you don't get any email coming to your inbox. And that's a vote of confidence in the list.
We want to make sure, too, for the listeners that are not quite sure about this or may have just a casual interest, this is a list that is not only talking about how to create content, you're also talking about where to get content, tips and tricks for new things that are coming out. In fact, one I saw that was interesting that you gathered up was a link to an article about automated TiVo to iPod video, which is something that I think anyone who is the owner of one of these new iPods is probably going to be very interested in.
Right. Anything is kind of fair game on this email list regarding the new iPod. And I think I picked up that link from Slash.org about some way of converting TiVo content to the iPod. And I imagine that also works for TiVo-like devices. There are other devices out there that are not made by TiVo but do the same thing. So, and I was really pleased to see on the list that somebody had figured out a way of creating video that plays both on the new iPod and on the Sony PSP. So you can create one video file that works on both portable devices. Well, that is a nice step forward for people who want to have the largest possible viewership. That, you know, the largest possible viewership is the most you can hope for with the least amount of work. You don't want to duplicate your work. Time is so valuable. That kind of information can be found on this email list.
So what do you think the coolest tip or the most interesting thing you've seen come across the list so far is?
I think it might have been that TiVo story, how to go from TiVo to the new iPod. There is a fellow, Barry Levine, who is just astounding in the quality of information he's sharing on this list. I sent him an email that he single-handedly has established the momentum of this email list. You know, when you start an email list as the founder, there's only so much work that you can do to kind of move things forward. And you always hope that the people who join the list are going to put their shoulder to the wheel, so to speak. And some of these people, with no prompting from me, jumped right in and are pushing this list forward with a rapid momentum.
Well, sometimes it's the guy that has the vision to create a list like this and just get a little publicity for it, and you're right, it'll take on a life of its own. And you definitely get credit for that, because I think there were a lot of people out there looking for some of this content right away. They were interested in creating video. Certainly all the authors out there, the content creators, wanted to take advantage of this, and at least initially, as is naturally the case, there was not a complete set of information on how to do it. And now we're seeing tools pop up. If you go to Version Tracker, you're seeing things pop up. You're seeing tutorials for some of the tools that we all know, iMovie, Final Cut Express, on how to accomplish this, or how to take existing content and adapt it. And it's terrific to have this kind of community that's developing right before your eyes, and to have it pushed out to your mailbox or be able to get it through RSS, not necessarily having to go and dig through post after post after post on a message board somewhere.
That's right. I'm not opposed to message boards, but I do think that lists have a certain vitality to them, timeliness. You were asking me what I thought was the most interesting post so far. I can tell you one of the funniest. There's somebody out there who's made some software called iSquint that converts, I think it converts QuickTime files or AVI files to the iPod video format. It's called iSquint. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. And I think it also does batches, so you can point a whole folder of video files towards iSquint and go for a really nice long hike in this gorgeous fall weather and come back and have all a batch of iPod video files. Now, wouldn't that be nice? I'm talking about the hike. Now, the hike would be nice, and the video files would be nice, too.
So what are you doing in the way of creating content for the iPod with video?
Thanks for asking. My particular interest is instructional learning materials, so I'll be putting up some materials on the web on how to play guitar, how to play major and minor chords. I think there's two lessons, each 5 minutes long, and they're totally free. They're in the public domain. I created them in the last 2 months or so. And so I'd like that to be available for anybody. The files are just basically helpful. The video quality and sound quality are not particularly high, but they're good, you know, usable. And I just want to show people what's possible. I had those files already. I had created them a month or two ago. So now I'm just going to create those into iPod video format. And then I'm taking some of my children's stories that I've written and putting them into OpenOffice Impress, the free software. And then I record that with a narration. I use some Windows software called Camtasia Studio to record the narration. That's commercial software. But down the road, I'll be using some free software called Wink, W-I-N-K, which is for Windows and Linux. And that records screen activity, plus in the future, it's going to record audio narration. So I'm using some commercial software now, but kind of in practice for when you'll be able to do this all with free software.
Phil, as a content creator, and especially for something like guitar lessons, why the iPod video? Why wouldn't it be better to produce something for a PowerBook or an iBook or something that you put up on your Mac screen? Why do you find the iPod for video a compelling medium for your particular piece of educational material?
Here's the scoop. Here's the scoop on the portability of the learning. It's so that people, for example, a high school student who has a pretty busy schedule, while they're waiting for their school bus in the morning, they might have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to wait for the school bus, and they could use that time with the iPod with video capabilities. Opening up your PowerBook or iBook at a bus stop where it could start raining or whatever, people typically don't open up laptops in an outdoor setting just casually for 3 minutes. Or 5 minutes or something like that. You know, opening it up, it means taking it out of the case and booting it up. You know, there's a boot time of even 2 minutes. So that's 2 minutes of learning that's lost. That's how the iPod with video capabilities, very portable. You can watch it on a moving bus. You can watch it while waiting for the bus. You can watch it while waiting for a dentist appointment. And since the iPod is so portable, the learning becomes very transportable. And then you can also show it to a friend. You can say, hey, you were asking me about how to learn to play some guitar. I downloaded this off the internet. It just shows some of the basics. And you can kind of loan your iPod to a friend who's sitting right beside you. And you might not typically loan your iBook or PowerBook. You might not just throw it over to a friend. Or it might be a colleague or whoever. But the portability means a lot.
So really you're targeting a convenience model, that
yes.
Something that is compelling enough that people are going to just be anxious to see it, and they're going to pull it out of their pocket and watch it for, like you say, that three-minute wait for the bus or the train or whatever.
Right. And I'm also targeting hiker to hiker. So when I'm out hiking and my Mac is creating iPod video files, I'm hoping that the person who's watching them, they're also out hiking, and that when they take a little break at the top of the mountaintop, they get a great view, and then they pull out their iPod with video, and they have a little learning experience. So that so it's like hiker to hiker. You know, I'm not even that big an outdoors person. I like the outdoors, the great outdoors. But the idea that somebody could take my learning material with them and experience that in a place that's not a traditional learning place. So that means they can go out, that they can be outdoors. You know, the screen of that thing is pretty clear. It might not be clear in total sunlight, but I haven't heard feedback on that. But theoretically, somebody could experience learning in a situation or a setting that is a non-traditional learning setting.
I have to admit, you've brought up some ideas that I really hadn't thought about as far as field trips and being able to take some things along with you that you might not normally have with you, and certainly not in that dynamic medium, and in a situation where a PowerBook or an iBook just would not be practical, to say the least.
Right. And I'm very, very big on screencasts. So that people can learn about computer software, learn about building web pages using the free software called EnView, or learn about this or learn about that. If they can learn about something on a very portable device, there's going to be more learning happening. And do you know what happens when there's more learning happening? There's going to be greater economic vitality in the country. More people learning stuff, it's good for everybody. And not just to that individual. It's great for everybody because there's just this increase in the skills and knowledge base. So my own particular interest is, quote, the digital divide, those people who typically don't have sufficient access. But I'm interested in everybody having the maximum quantity of learning opportunity at the lowest cost or no cost, if possible.
Well, I have to admit, I'm highly intrigued by some of the things you're bringing up, because there hasn't been a lot of discussion, at least not that I've seen, about the iPod with video as a learning tool. It's been more about the entertainment and time shifting and that kind of thing. So it sounds like you are clearly on the right track and doing some very interesting things.
Yeah, I would just add one last comment, is that I do think this new iPod with video is the first step towards an electronic book device where the text is highly readable, very clear, and the device might cost $200 or $300, but the books will cost $2. It's kind of the opposite of the inkjet printer, where the printer is really cheap and the ink is really expensive. In the future, you'll buy the device, which will be a little expensive, but the books themselves, you'll buy books for $2, and an expensive book in a few years is going to be a $4 book. That's going to be like a really expensive book. Most books will be $1, $2. And rich media books that you'll, you know, the bookstore will be on the internet. It won't be where you drive to. It's where you click to. And the publishing houses will perform the same task they've always done of selecting good material, editing it. But there'll be more books published, and there will be more direct compensation to authors who typically have been a little bit on the left outside of the compensation scheme. But considering that they produce the content, authors ought to, you know, derive some revenue from what's created. And so I'm pretty buoyant that within 3 to 5 years, there'll be an electronic book device. It'll be an outgrowth of the current iPod video, and it will do text, audio, video, the whole shebang. It might even use holographic memory so that it could even hold as many as 100 full-length movies on holographic memory. That's the storage. It's a three-dimensional storage that's coming down the pike.
Phil, one last thing before we go, because you're bringing up some interesting points, and especially about the cost of some of the rich media content. There certainly is an argument to go that direction, but the fact that it is rich media, it's going to require more author time and a lot more production time, especially to produce good quality content. Do you think that that is going to factor in and still yield that low a price?
Good question. I do think that in the future, a lot of content is going to be created by groups rather than individuals. You'll see group authorship as a very common thing, where 3 or 5 or 8 people produce a particular piece of work. And what used to be called books are still going to exist, but I don't think they're going to have the same length. I don't think it's going to take a year to create the kind of product that people want to consume. I think it might be a 3-month product or a 6-month product, but with 6 people working on it. Currently, there's some people, authors out there, that spend 7 years writing a book. One book. It's just incredible. It's superhuman. I don't think that's going to happen in the future. I think that the length of the content is going to be shorter, and that books are going to kind of resemble almost long magazines, like this Make magazine that comes out from O'Reilly. It's almost a book, but it's almost a magazine. You know, it's long, but it's excellent, and it's multi-authored. They even call themselves a quasi-book. They're not really a magazine. I mean, if you look at, you know, but whatever. I do think the price is going to be pretty low for a book, I think, in the coming years, just because there won't be transportation costs. It'll be delivered digitally. There'll be zero materials cost, zero transportation cost, and that removes a lot of the cost of producing books.
Well, certainly we're watching the world change before our eyes, and once again, Apple has introduced something that is going to help foster some of that change. And then we run into someone like you who is assisting in the creation of communication channels for those interested in creating the content, and that's probably not fair. interested in not just creating the content, but also just interested in getting the most out of this new device. So thank you for a terrific new resource that everyone is going to be interested in, I think, especially those who own now the iPod with video.
Chuck, thanks for talking with me.
And we'll make sure that we have the not an iPod video link in the show notes so that you can go out and sign up, whether you elect to join the list or just subscribe to the RSS feed. Phil Shapiro, the creator of the Not a Video iPod list, thanks so much for talking to us on Mac Voices.
Thank you, Chuck.
Just a couple quick items of interest before we go. First, I'd like to invite you to listen to the other podcast that I host, Mac Notables, where you get to hear from the Mac experts you really want to hear from. Recently, I talked one-on-one with Chris Breen of PlaylistMag.com about the new iPod with video, Bob Dr. Mac Levitis about his preferences in third-party earphones on your iPod, Ted Landau on how to solve the spinning beach ball, the implications of force quitting your applications, and how to get those stuck items out of your trash, and our panel of experts grew by one when Jason Snell, the editor of Macworld Magazine, joined our all-star team. Right now, the complete panel consists of Chris Breen, Brian Chaffin of the Mac Observer and iPod Observer, Jim Dalrymple of Mac Central, Adam and Tanya Angst of Tidbits and the Take Control series of ebooks, Andy Inocco of the Chicago Sun-Times, Ted Landau, Bob Levitis, Dennis Sellers of Maximum News, and the newest member, Jason Snell. You can get more information or subscribe at MacNotables.com or just search for Mac Notables in the iTunes Music Store. You won't be disappointed. I'm also pleased to let you know that the folks at Red Rock Software, the publishers of Red Rock Deltagraph, have launched a new user group program. They will be offering review software, raffle prizes, and presentation resources to help enlighten user group members about the ability of Deltagraph to communicate complex information in appealing, sophisticated visual formats. If you think that the charting capabilities that came with your favorite spreadsheet or presentation program are good, then you need to learn more about Deltagraph. You can find the information on the Mug Center or from the link in our show notes. Be sure to get your user group connected with Red Rock Software. And finally, if you're coming to San Francisco for Macworld Expo, I want to remind you that we still have some rooms left in our room block for the Mug Center's Macworld Hotel deal. You can join Mac Voices, the Mug Center, and our friends at our headquarters hotel, the Renaissance Park 55, for only $159 per night. That's a terrific rate for a 4-star hotel only a couple blocks from Moscone, and even fewer from the Apple Store. But the real deal is if you stay longer. You can take up to $150 off your final bill by being a guest for 9 nights, $100 off for 8 nights, and $50 off for 7 nights under our offer. But that's not all. Each reserved room will get a copy of Serene Saver from Amuse, a free license to Notebook 2.0 from Circus Ponies, a free license to Ticker Shock from Mesa Dynamics, one free book from O'Reilly, one free license to TopX Notes from Tropical Software, and one free copy of Default Folder from St. Clair Software. You also get free high-speed internet access and 10% off dining in any of the Park 55 restaurants. That's a great price on one of the best hotels in San Francisco, discounts for longer stays, and a goodie package that can't be beat. So if you've made other plans, cancel them and join us. There's a link to all the details in our show notes, or just email me at chuck@macvoices.com and I'll get you hooked up. Of course, you don't just have to email me about the hotel deal. Drop me a line with your thoughts on the show and what you'd like to see in future episodes. Or you can call our talkback line at 206-350-1371. What are you and your Mac friends talking about? I want to know. Don't forget to visit macvoices.com for access to all our previous episodes, the show notes for this edition, and the links to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything. I'm Chuck Joyner, and I'll be back again soon with more talk from the Mac community on the next Mac Voices. Thanks for listening.